Hey everyone, it's Carla Muller and Sam Owen here on Bullshit and Bravery, your podcast aimed to improve mental well-being in our primary sector through sharing real experiences. A big thank you to our sponsor, the Waikato Rural Support Trust, for funding this pilot, which includes 6 episodes. The views shared in this podcast are those of the hosts and the guests, not the Waikato Rural Support Trust.
The content discussed in this podcast may be triggering and relate to mental health challenges such as depression, postnatal depression, anxiety and suicide. Please seek help if you're triggered by any of the content in these podcasts.
Welcome to this episode of Bullshit and Bravery with Sam and I. And before we jump into our guest, let's just touch on what we're seeing on the ground. So Sam, over to you.
Yeah, so, you know, we're starting to get into the pointy end of the season. So what's going to be left, you know, when everything's tidied up? So we need to look at what's happening on the ground, what we're feeding, what's a residual supplement we're looking at? What's the point of what needs to be fed now and what can we use to achieve milk production or what we need to continue milking with versus what do we need to get through winter? What's a normal winter look like? What's a hard winter look like? What's an easy winter look like? And what are those feeding levels? And if we're going to continue to feed those supplements over summer to milk on, what's that look like from a financial point of view if we need to top up those stocks later on? Do we need to be looking at contracts now or later, or do we need to be looking at different types of supplement and milk on now and then keep supplement for later?
Especially since spring these years is so variable, like who even knows what a consistent spring is these days?
Yeah, and it depends on what crop, you know, like at the end of the day, palm kernel doesn't quite cut it when you've got fodder beet or, you know, rape in the paddock, but you need to have those bales of silage just to, you know, buffer. So it's what you're choosing and how you choose it and what makes economic sense. Does it mean that you dry off some of the low producers because it's not worth feeding that 50 cent a kilo dry matter supplement to because you're just not getting a return on it?
A good economist would say, what's the marginal cost of that milk and what's your marginal return?
Exactly, right? And supplement's not getting any cheaper to make. And the choice of supplement we make or the type of crop all depends on what we're going to do with it. And feeding expensive supplements to dry cows is probably a marginal cost at best in a normal for par season, but it's all situational. And you can never make those judgment calls based off your neighbor's farm. You've got to do an actual budget and an actual, you know, overall scheme of things on farm.
And a contingency plan.
Yep.
Yeah. So for me, I guess, again, you know, hoping that we're heading into a quieter period on farms for some. For me, it would be around making sure your compliance records are all up to date, you know, all the stuff we don't want to do or don't have time to do when we're busy. You know, have you got your annual records up to date? Have you got your budgets, your nitrogen budgets into Fonterra or whoever you might be sending them into? Have you done your overseer file if that's required? And NAIT compliance as well, you know, you're coming to the end of the season, you've got cows moving or whatever that, wherever they might be going. So make sure all your compliance is up to scratch. It's a hell of a lot easier to do it as the season ends than trying to do it 6 months later when we've all forgotten what happened. And if you need help, ask for help. You know, call your local, whoever it might be that's there to help you, your consultant, your banker, whatever it might be to get the records. Make sure you've got them all saved in the right place.
Yeah, and trying to do it on when it happens is the easiest because you're not having to dredge up memories or search your notebooks. But if the next best thing is to, you know, try and make some notes around them so you've got the framework to put that information in later. So I see that's, you know, that's probably key at any month or any stage, but coming up to the closure of a season and planning for, you know, we always know winter is probably going to be the worst, most, you know, horrible season of them all, but it can be offset by, you know, making a plan when times are fairly good to then move through and have it in the bank for autumn and winter and then setting yourself up for a good spring again.
You might be putting some processes in place so that you and your staff can do the next season of data recording easier.
Exactly.
All right, well, we'll chuck into our next guest then. Welcome to this episode of Bullshit and Bravery. The guest today is the phenomenal Alistair Taylor, who is Chief Customer Officer at Overseer and a genuine all-round good guy. Originally from Wales and now based in Christchurch, Al had a pretty rough ride in 2020 when his then wife, Kristen Taylor, died by suicide following some maternal mental health challenges. So a pretty heavy story today and some heavy topics of conversation. So please don't forget to reach out to the numbers in the intro here. But let's just crack into it. Al, tell us a bit more about your journey.
Yeah, so as you say, yeah, we lost Chris back in 2020, and that was, it was sudden, but it wasn't sudden. Chris had always wanted to be a mum, and that came real for us in October 2018 when Greer was born. And leading into that, we thought we'd done all the right things because Chris had had mental health challenges when she was a child, particularly around, and so, you know, she came off a farm in Southland, and something that will probably connect to a lot of people in the agricultural community. You know, she was used to being at home with the family, tight-knit family, you know, middle of nowhere in Southland. And then suddenly she's sent off to secondary school in Gore at the other end of Southland. And that kicked off some fairly significant issues for her then. But I guess we thought, and she thought, she'd got those in check. And she'd had 8 years of quite a challenging time for various reasons. Breakdown of a previous marriage and getting through all of that. And then, you know, the two of us getting together before having Greer. So we'd done the right things. We'd had that conversation with the GP. We'd had that conversation with a counsellor. We thought we'd got the preparation and everything was fine. You know, had a traumatic birth with Greer, as can often be the way. But then suddenly it got to the June the following year, and it's almost as if something switched. And unfortunately, we then went into a cycle of Chris becoming highly suicidal and usually taking action along that route. She was hospitalized in the mental health units in Wellington. I forget now, thankfully, I guess, 3 or 4 times over that period. I guess for me, looking back on it now and with the benefit of some distance, the bit that I still find most frustrating is 2 of her suicide attempts involved accidents with vehicles. They involved rescue helicopters. They involved fire engines. They involved multiple ambulances. They involved, you know, shutting the expressway north of Wellington in one instance. And all of that money is there through the health system and through ACC for that sort of critical care. And just how much money we could save as a country and how better we could spend it and how better lives could be if we could direct some of that towards mental health care and getting people into a better position to understand these challenges, but also to have, we want to stop people falling off the cliff, but we also want to have more ambulances at the bottom of the cliff.
That's incredibly traumatic and something that no one should ever have to go through.
Mm.
I mean, obviously you guys did all the right things. You recognized all the signs. You had a history there. How do you start to identify that and ask for help in those situations for people that maybe, you know, haven't had some of that background?
I think that's one of the challenges we have to get through. And I think one of the, if any positive has come out of COVID and the lockdowns and all of this, you know, the last few years that we've all lived through, is certainly for, I think, you know, particularly in the rural community, but I get the sense from, you know, New Zealand generally, is there is more of an awareness that, you know, we are fragile human beings and we don't need to do the go and drink a cup of concrete and get over it, mate. Although sometimes that's true when you're talking about football results, eh, Sam? But but when we're dealing with the seriousness of these issues, it's having those abilities to reach out through, you know, things, even if it's things like the 1737 service or all of the ways that are listed at the end of every article that ever covers mental health now. But the challenge we have to have is then the ability for somebody to follow that up very rapidly. And also, you know, at the end of the day, we're dealing with human beings. We're dealing with individuals. Through Chris's journey, you know, we were fortunate enough that we were able in a position where we could pay for private care through a psychologist, as well as going through the maternal mental health team. And still we ended up where we ended up. And that was going through 4 different psychologists and counselors over that time, because you've got to find the person that can connect with you and you've got to find the person that can actually provide you with the treatment that helps. And I think tragically, I think we probably found the right person at the end. Unfortunately, it was too late and Chris was already too far gone by that stage to actually be brought back from where she was. It's, you know, how do we get that? You know, we need to have that resource. And there needs to be a long-term commitment. And I know, you know, this is the challenge we have with all healthcare, that, you know, we need to have these incredibly skilled people. We need to retain them in New Zealand. Every other country wants them as well. And we need to give them the resources that they need to be able to provide this service. But equally, I guess to sort of counteract that, you say, when we talk to, you know, concentrate on the top of the cliff rather than the bottom, it's all of the things like, you know, Rural Support Trust are doing, Sam, the work you do, the stuff that John Kirwan's done through his organization, the stuff that Mike King's doing through I Am Hope. It's that idea of giving people the ability to actually control it more themselves and really to be more self-aware of their own issues. And I think, you know, certainly if I, again, you know, looking back on how I'm still here and how I'm still doing what I'm doing in a situation where, you know, at 48, I was suddenly thrown into being a single parent, which certainly wasn't on the life plan, then it's sort of retrenching back and going, okay, well, how do I get through this? And what are the mechanisms that I'm going to use to get through this? And giving ourselves the skills to be able to get through that. And I guess, you know, I look back, you know, keep saying I look back, but it's a lot of reflection when you're having these sorts of conversations. And I guess in a weird way, I was lucky that I was 48 and that I'd already had I've got two grown up children. I'd been through that. You know, I've got a couple of friends who I've met through this process and a family member who I know over here, part of Chris's family, who have been thrown into a similar situation when they're much younger. And I think it's much harder then because you haven't got that experience and, you know, bit to sort of fall back on.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think a common link, like you say, is that connection, you know, whether it's connection with, it could be just a friend or even a random, but having a connection and creating that connection, obviously before it's too late.
Yes.
And the number of people I've talked to have sought counselling, sought psychologists, and they've just tried it once or even a doctor and gone, I didn't feel it. It's human nature that you don't connect with everyone. I mean, if you say you're friends with everyone in the world, that either makes you a liar or people, everybody around you a liar. So you have to sort out connection, and that's just friendship at a basis, as a basic level.
And particularly friendship, when we're talking about this, because you're talking about unearthing, you know, there were discussions that I sat in on with Chris that nobody else outside of that room had ever heard, you know. And that's the same when anybody's sitting in with counseling, you're sharing your, you know, if it's going to work, you're sharing your deepest, darkest fears, secrets, hopes, dreams, and you've got to get through that. And so, yeah, you're absolutely right. You've got to have a connection there. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a counselor. I think, you know, it's, I would say, you know, certainly for my mental health journey, I'm no more and no less messed up than the rest of us, I guess. But, you know, having gone through this situation, I look at it and go, well, how did I get through those 2 years? And then, you know, the time since then. And it's absolutely, yes, I had a grief counselor who I worked with every month after Chris passed away. And I was incredibly grateful to the funeral home in Carpaday who first looked after, who suggested that and put me in touch with Sue. But beyond that, it's been my network, my friends, my acquaintances and family members who, you know, have very much seen me through. And I think, you know, it's that theme of being as open as you can be and not, you know, we all, you know, how many times a day do we ask the question, hey, Sam, how you going? Hey, Carla, how you going? You know, and yeah, it's all good. You know, it's a quick, and it's actually, as soon as you actually give the honest answer, it changes the conversation dramatically, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think it's critical that we, when we ask that question, we're asking it in such a way that it's not a throwaway question that we don't expect a response to, right? When we ask that question, we actually have to mean it and hold that space for the response, because so many times it's, oh, how you doing? But you're not actually that interested. Whereas actually if you ask people, you know, you stop, you look them in the eyes and you actually go, how are you doing? Now, truly, how are you doing? You know, you actually start to build some more of those connections. I just wanted to touch on one thing you said earlier, you know, that connection, that not finding the support in the medical world straight away necessarily. You know, for me, that was really challenging as well, you know, living in such a remote area when I was struggling in the East Cape, and there weren't a lot of counselling options. And any ones that were there were, you know, challenging and a couple of hours drive, you know, and even then, you know, your GPs were your locums and you don't open up to a different person every single time. So I think it's particularly a challenge in our rural situations. And so, you know, that's so often where friends, family, and other connections kind of step in to fill that void. And the stress on those people is phenomenal. So, you know, obviously going through this by Chris's side and doing all you could, how did you manage to look after yourself in that process? Not to mention your young daughter at that time too.
Yeah, I think it's very similar, I guess, to how I've sort of managed to keep going afterwards as well, which essentially is actually in certain ways being quite selfish. and setting a, you know, a clear routine. So if I think, as I say, you know, Chris spent a lot of time in hospital, both in for physical injuries that she'd inflicted upon herself and in the mental health unit. And it was very much about setting a routine that said, actually, I could sit here all night. You know, I would love to sit here all night, but actually I've got to go to sleep. I've got to get some sleep. I've got to get up in the morning. I've got to work, whatever it might be. I was very lucky. I was with Overseer at the time, and the team at the time from the board downwards were absolutely phenomenal, being quite happy that, you know, you're taking working from home to the extreme when you're working for doing board meetings from the MRI suite at Wellington Hospital. But being selfish and going, look, you know, I'm leaving at 6:30. I know you don't want me to leave at 6:30. I don't want to leave at 6:30, but I know that I need to leave at 6:30. It's after the Wellington traffic. It takes me an hour to get back to Cupperty, where we were living at the time, giving me enough time to go home, get some food, decompress, watch TV for an hour to think about nothing, and then go to bed, and then get up in the morning and go drive back down and after rush hour, go and be in the hospital for sort of 9, half past 9 when she'd be waking up. And very much it's the same thing now of going, well, yes, I'd love to do what we all like, you know, sit up and watch that next episode or whatever you're watching, or sit up and have a chat with the next door neighbor or whatever. But knowing I need 8 hours sleep, that's one of the things I've learned through this process. And I can't be the best version of me if I don't get 8 hours sleep. So I know I have to be in bed by 10. I've got a routine around that. Yes, I take antidepressants because I've had anxiety ever since this all kicked off, and have just learned that, well, actually that's just part of the, you know, that's part of the suite of tools that you have to use. But I also use a whole load of holistic remedies as well to try and see me through and give me the energy to do a pretty demanding full-time job and raise a small child as well. So, and go on with life, because yeah, I have been lucky enough to go on with life, and the focus is Greer, and the focus is very much bringing her up as Chris and I wanted to. But equally, you know, it's life goes on. So, you know, I'm lucky enough to have met a new partner and to have, you know, recently moved in with her. But Chris is still very much a massive part of our lives and always will be.
Yeah. I think the key, what you've said as well, it takes a village. You know, it takes a village. And from a bit of our backgrounds, Al, coming from South Wales, where the mining villages were living on top of each other, it takes a village. Everybody else knew everybody else's kids. If they were hungry, they went into the next door neighbor. And it's no different now. It's just probably you pick up where everybody is on snap maps and tell them which house to go to. But
yeah.
You know, it takes a village. And I think that is probably in Te Reo and Maori culture, it's something probably the Western world has let go of a little bit. But I think, you know, that it takes a village, whether it be a grandparent, whether it be a friend, whether it be an acquaintance, to pick a kid up from school when you need to. If that network is around you, you've got that support network. And sometimes we turn a blind eye to that, or whether sometimes we just don't access it well enough.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I made the hard decision back in 2021 to go, actually, look, you know, yes, Greer was born in Wellington. Yes, I got it. You know, we were really fortunate in that we had a fantastic antenatal group that we got involved with, and all of that group stayed together, and they were really supportive of me and us through that process. But my feeling was, this doesn't feel like home. This doesn't feel that, you know, yes, there's this group here, but equally, you know, they've all got 18-month-old, 2-month-old, 2-year-old, 3-year-old kids as well that they're struggling with. Whereas I knew that in Christchurch, there was a wider network of support for me in friends and acquaintances and in people from the industry. And I think, again, we do have that. We are lucky to be in agriculture. Yes, there are extra challenges, exactly as you said, Carla, but I think there's very much a willingness to help each other out. And so I made that decision to move down to Canterbury, and it was absolutely the right thing because, you know, when Greer enrolled at preschool down here, basically the list of people that could pick her up was pretty much half the village, because there's 2 or 3 families there that I knew that if I wasn't there, then I could rely on them to pick her up and go forward. So yeah, totally and utterly agree. It's about us supporting, and very much, I think, you know, using the technology, you know, my type 5 that I've talked about before, you know, one's in Dunedin, one's here in Christchurch, one's in Tauranga, one's in Hamilton. We don't live on top of each other, but if any of us needs each other, then we're always there for each other. So And they were there right the way throughout this process, and they're still there for me now, and we're there for each other. So you don't have to be on top of each other, but you have to be open and to have that relationship and to have the confidence, I think, of no matter how scary it can be. I've stepped off a cliff a few times in my life, and I think that's one of the times when people should have confidence in, you know, if you step off the cliff and say, actually, do you know what? I'm really struggling. The right people will be there to catch you and hold your hand on the way down.
Yeah. And so you're talking about, you know, the importance of having a village. And I think, as you say, in today's world, the village has changed. Technology has enabled it in different ways, but equally, you know, our lifestyles have made it different in others. But I guess a shout out from me was that actually, you know, people like yourself, Al, and you, Sam, were part of that village for me. You know, people that could share their own stories and made me feel like it was okay not to be okay, you know, was really important. And it was just two Welsh guys that had moved to New Zealand on Twitter, you know. and all of a sudden, here we are, right? So, you know, the village has changed. And I think sometimes it's easier to get help from someone not living next door to you, and particularly in the rural community as well, when everyone knows everyone's business. You know, sometimes it is easier to use technology in a way that can help and support you.
I think there is still a challenge there, and certainly that was one of the things I brought up in my submission to Chris's coroner's case was, you know, you're absolutely, I guess the negative of that side is essentially things like, particularly around our mental health service, but around physical health as well. Essentially, those services were designed by the help of a famous Welshman, Sam, back in the 40s, you know, for that community. And so we talk about, you know, care in the community, and yet our communities in a lot of cases have been eroded. And so you're expecting people to get that support. And that is the challenge, I think, that we do need to have the confidence and the bravery and the openness to have these conversations like we're having today. Exactly as you say, Carla, to come out and be open and honest about it is okay to not be okay. It sounds trite, but it's absolutely true. And if you're not okay, don't tell everybody you are, because there's help out there, and it's a bit of a trope, isn't it? But ultimately, we do never know what everybody else is going through. And everyone's got something going on in their life that actually they could probably help you with, and you can probably help them with. And so we can all get more out of life by having those conversations. But we've also got to look at, you know, there's a fact, and I hope, I'm confident that regardless of politics, the fact that this government's appointed a mental health minister is a fantastic step in the right direction. But geez, he's got some work to do.
Yeah. Reaching out is one of those things where you're stepping off that cliff. You are stepping off that cliff, and you are just, you're making yourself vulnerable. And sometimes when you're vulnerable, you are open to both positive and negative things. But if you have that, you know, that tight five or your group of mates, they are your net. They're the people holding the mattress or the net. And sometimes when you're at the most vulnerable, you receive the most feedback, but it creates a stronger bond. I mean, you don't go through these things and don't create bonds or friendship or relationships with people. Like you're saying with your grief counselor, it's an unfortunate event that has caused you to need a grief counselor, but that is now a connection that has brought you through the most traumatic time in anybody's life. And unfortunately, there are positives to horrible negative outcomes.
Yes. Yeah, very much so. And I think it's looking for those things and going, and I guess particularly when, you know, I guess it's true when anyone dies or you go through anything that causes this, but I guess particularly for someone, you know, Chris was 35 when she died, to have lost that potential, even just as a mum, let alone anything else she could and should have achieved, is just tragic. So, and the other thing as well is it's not just about going on with life. It's about going, okay, well, how can I bring added meaning to that? Because I don't want, you know, Chris was incredibly well-liked and incredibly well-known. And as I've said all the way through, you know, left a real mark with people for her openness. And I guess, you know, that was a big part in positioning me to be able to do what I've done. And so making her life mean more than just being here for 35 years and meeting me and us having Greer and everything else. And so, you know, really looking to bring meaning to that and give voice to these challenges are out there and we have to address them. And unfortunately, particularly when it comes to maternal mental health, we've got the worst statistics in the world. And there's no rhyme nor reason for that, because for the reasons that you and I moved out here, Sam, it's a bloody fantastic country and it's still a fantastic country. So I still kind of scrabble, you know, having worked with PADA, the mental health charity, and spoken to lots of others, I still struggle to understand why mental health statistics are as bad as they are. But it's where we are and we need to get better.
Yeah, and certainly, you know, from all of us, it's been really heartening to see all the work you have been doing. And maybe just want to touch on a little bit more about Kristen's Light and the work you're doing in that space, Al.
Yeah, so I think it was something that just came out from, I can't even remember how we got in touch with PADA, which is the Perinatal Anxiety and Distress Association. And so we got in touch with them and asked for donations to them in lieu of flowers at Chris's funeral. Unfortunately, Chris's funeral was one of those that was COVID level 2. So we had it limited to 60 people in two Attapery pipe band hall and everybody else watching on a live stream, which I always find, you know, given my wry sense of humor, it's kind of ironic having, you know, I've got some wonderful photographs from our wedding, but we never got a video. So I've got a fantastic video of Chris's funeral, but I don't have a video of our wedding. It's like,
you have a terrible sense of humor.
All I can say to anybody is, I know they cost a fortune, but, and maybe you'll get divorced in 10 years and not need it, but just pay for the bloody video, all right? Just pay for it, okay? My biggest piece of advice out of this, just do it. Anyway, and so then through having sort of gone out, and I was then contacted by a wonderful journalist at Stuff, who unfortunately has actually passed away herself thanks to bowel cancer since then. And she reached out and did an article on Chris, and that sort of brought it again more to the public domain. So since then, I've also done some work with Mothers Matter and done a video for them with their campaign, you know, specifically around maternal mental health. And I guess probably the last few years, it's been about just whenever there is something which is in the mental health space, and particularly in the maternal mental health space, you know, using that Kristen's Light hashtag, PADA, you know, used the money that they got from those donations to completely redo their website, which has enabled them to engage with people better, to communicate with people better, to support people better. And given that Chris had done marketing and sales with Balance for, you know, 7 or 8 years before we moved to Wellington, that seemed very appropriate as well. And I guess probably I'm still sitting very, thanks for your kind words about how much I've done. I guess you're still always left there going, I'm not doing enough. And so it's looking for those opportunities for what else can I do to help in that space without going to the default, which seems to be, well, I'll set up another charity and do this. I think there's enough organizations out there already. There's a lot of people trying to do, you know, what you two guys are doing and what I'm trying to do and what others are doing to raise the consciousness around the importance of looking after ourselves and being aware of our mental health and reaching out for help and finding the ways to manage it for yourself with support. So I don't want to just replicate what other people are doing, but certainly, you know, continuing to look for ways to support others in doing things like, you know, what you guys are doing through this podcast, which I think is fantastic.
Awesome. Thanks for that, Al. So just maybe finishing up on your kind of top messages or top tips, maybe both to those who might be struggling themselves and those who are supporting people who are struggling.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds really trite, but it's keep it simple. I say it's about have a reason to go on. You wake up in the morning, what's your reason to go on? My reason to go on is very clear. I've got a 5-year-old bouncing around the house watching Bluey at the moment, who's going back to meeting a new teacher tomorrow and going back to school on Thursday. And you know, she's absolutely my reason to go on. Get a routine, get your sleep, get in out in the fresh air. You know, you guys would have seen me on Twitter before going, I've had a crap day. I've had a crap morning. I have to get outside. And I know that whole piece around getting outside, getting in the fresh air. Even if you're on the farm, go out and appreciate where you are. Take that minute. I will always remember there was a guy that used to work for me when I first came out here he'd been a farm manager. He'd been a farmer. He was working at Summit Quinfos for me. And he'd spent some time up in the Ruahinis on a farm. And he went there to do a fertilizer sales call, and he drove in the drive and he phoned me up in tears on the way back. And he said, I lived on that farm for 6 years and I never, ever appreciated what an amazing spot it was. And then I drove down that driveway and I looked at it and I thought, what the f- were you doing, Dave? What were you doing? It's because you're so busy thinking about that mob needs moving, that paddock needs grazing, that paddock needs harvesting, you know, all those things that we do on a day-to-day basis. Take some time to appreciate where you are. I say, if you're on the farm, you're probably in a much better position than I am just outside of Christchurch. If you're somewhere in the city, go and find a green space. Just do something to just take some time for yourself. Eat well. And again, it's a basic thing, but we all default to the crap food, but, you know, get some decent food in us and you know, we've got amazing food here. So let's make the most of it. And connections. like we've said, whether it's through social media, whether it's on the phone, whether it's instant messaging, all of, you know, whether it's in person, all of the above, and being open with those people and working out who you can rely on and who you can trust. And even if you're not sure about that, I guess, as you and I both said in this conversation, Sam, you know, take a leap of faith and step off the cliff, because I think you'll be surprised that actually most people are actually just pretty genuinely nice people when you get past the front. And if you're talking to them and you're being honest, then you'll get an honest human response back, and whatever you need is usually there. So it's having that bravery to just be open and honest with people rather than thinking you need to put a front on it, because I don't think we do anymore.
And, you know, that's kind of where the name for this whole podcast has come from, right? It's just trying to cut through that whole bullshit that we tell ourselves that no one's there to help us, no one can care. All the stories we tell ourselves, and actually just be brave, ask for help, yeah. You know, whatever it might be that you need.
And find somebody to connect you. I think it's one of the things that struck out for me. Chris's favourite band was Foo's. We were out at the stadium on Wednesday in Christchurch for their latest concert here, which was, again, it's even things like that. It's mixed feelings. Fantastic to be there. Love being there. But first Foo's concert I saw was in 2015 with Chris in that same stadium. But then a band like that has just gone through a whole load of grief as well. And there's things like that that you can find connection with listening to their latest album, and particularly Under You, the song, which is very clearly about Dave Grohl's relationship with Taylor Hawkins. Anyone who's lost anybody that means a lot to them, listen to that song, because you know you're not alone. There's a line in that which is stuck in my head, which is, there's days that last for seconds and there's days that last for weeks. And that's very much been my last 5 years. And I think, you know, again, just little things like that, someone you're never going to meet, someone you're never going to have a conversation with, but, you know, and someone that's got more money than we're ever going to dream of, and yet he's only human and he's gone through the same things that anybody goes through when you go through grief.
Yep. Fair enough. Hey, mate, listen, we're very thankful for you to take the time to speak to us today, but we like to always wrap up with a bit of quick fire trivia just to get you to kind of ease up and give the listeners a bit of a defrag. So we're going to spit some questions at you. These are not going to affect the outcome of any election or deny you long-term residency in New Zealand, but
revoke my citizenship.
There's one contentious question which will always be the last one that it gets asked, and it's a bit of a deal breaker, so we'll go with it. Carla?
So I'll get started. Soccer or rugby?
Rugby.
Good boy. Good boy.
Is that the true answer, or is that just the answer you have to give because you're in New Zealand now?
It's rugby. I paid $800. I paid $800 to be at the 2011 World Cup final, and it's the best $800 I've ever spent.
I paid $600 and we didn't make the final. I went to the semi-final.
I went to the semi as well, mate.
Yeah. And he's in Canterbury, and rugby doesn't count in Canterbury. Are you a steak man or a chop man?
Oh, that's a real.
If you go for the barbecue, are you going to steak
on the,
or
on the
go
barbecue?
The chop?
Probably steak. In a restaurant, probably lamb.
Okay,
yeah,
nice. Tea or coffee?
Coffee.
Black. That was straight away. Yeah.
Actually, I'd say most people have been
black coffee. I do eat a lot of cheese to compensate for it. Okay,
vacation or staycation?
We've just done a staycation because we've moved into a new house, and calling it a holiday is probably not really true. So I think actually with a small child, definitely a vacation.
Right. And this is the contentious one.
Okay.
This is the polarizing question of the day.
And you will be judged on this. Cat or dog?
Well, we've got 3 dogs and 2 cats. So what does that give you the answer of?
Dogs win.
Did you say you're hedging your bets?
Including a very old 12-year-old dog. So I think, yeah, if I was chose to choose, it would be a dog.
Yes.
Although maybe we need to ask Gria that one as the true decision maker in the house.
Oh, she loves Izzy because Izzy's mama's dog. So, yeah, it's
it's a dog.
Izzy was the one that came to the funeral. Yeah. So, yeah. It's,
Well, I suspect then that if we tallied up all of the podcasts, I'd say that dogs are probably
dogs
slightly
winning.
In front.
Yeah.
Carla's team cat. It's very contentious.
See, I've got working dogs. So working dogs kind of
that's a bit different.
Blur the line between pet dogs and working dogs. There's no such thing as a pet dog in my house.
No, we've got 3 very soft pets. So, yeah.
No. Hey, Al, once again, it's always a pleasure to chat, mate.
No, thanks,
and
guys.
Keep up the great work you do.
And you too.
With the foundation. And, yeah, we can only just keep talking about it, keep it normalised, and hopefully that people just reach out.
Yeah, no, very much so. Keep doing what you're doing, guys.
So Alistair brings us to the end of our sixth episode, and we've thoroughly enjoyed pulling these together. And first up, we'd like to thank the Rural Support Trust in the Waikato for making this possible.
Yep, and also to all of our guests that have given up their time to come and see us in studio or via Zoom meetings. Thanks to Julia Jones. Thanks to Adam Thompson, Mavanri Alexander, Al Taylor, and Jenna Smith. They've all been great guests and have enjoyed every minute of their conversations, even though some of them have been very raw and very fresh for them. Hopefully them sharing their stories have benefited our listeners and hopefully create a necessity or a want for people to go and seek help if they need it.
Absolutely. That was all we tried to do when we set out on this journey, was help one person through sharing someone else's story. So hopefully we've done that for you, and, you know, share these to other people that you think they might help as well. Sam, what are your three key takeaways from the series?
Right. So nice and quick. Say the nice thing. Doesn't cost you anything to pay someone a compliment, and the positivity could really change their day. It takes a village. It takes a village to raise somebody. That might be a network, it might be friends, it might be a local sporting club, but you have to be vulnerable enough to ask for help, but also get out there and create your village or create your network. And also utilize the tools that are available if you need help. You know, Waikato Rural Support Trust, amongst the other rural support trusts right throughout the country, 1737, your local GP. There's plenty of great data on the mental health websites. And just get out there and learn some triggers or learn your energy building exercises so you can battle on through or improve your mental health.
Awesome. I guess mine would be ask for help. Even if you're not entirely sure what that is yet, just ask for help. It's the first step. Genuinely care about people and get to know them and their normal so you can understand when they might deviate from that. And asking how people are, if you're asking it, care about the response. And if you're answering it, actually make an effort to answer truthfully and honestly. That's the only way you're going to start to get help and support. And then the third one for me is setting boundaries. You know, everyone said something different, be it sleep, be it eating, be it time in the bush, time with their kids, whatever it might be. Understand what you need to have in every day and then make sure that happens as much as possible.
And so, guys, this is obviously the wrap-up episode for season one. Jump on board our Facebook page or on our Twitter handle. Let us know what you think. You know, we would love to do a series two, but if the demand's not there, well, so be it. But like we said, all this podcast series was there to is to reach out to one person and help one person. And if we've done that, we are ecstatic.
Yeah. So like, share, comment, give us a yell. Hopefully we've helped you, or maybe share this with someone who you think it could help. And stay tuned. Hopefully we'll be able to bring you a season two. And in the meantime, thanks for listening.
Thank you very much for listening, and if you need help or support, please reach out to your local Rural Support Trust on 0800 787 254 or text 1737 or reach out to the Mental Health Foundation. Once again, thank you to the Waikato Rural Support Trust for the support of this podcast.
Please like our Facebook page, Bullshit and Bravery, and don't forget to listen to the next podcast episode. Get in touch if you have any feedback for us or if you're interested in being a guest.